Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Product Liability and Maritime Law Edition. I'm your host, Grace Gotchling. On March 19, 2019, the Supreme Court decided Air and Liquid Systems Corporation v. DeVries, a case addressing the liability of a manufacturer under maritime law for injuries caused when asbestos was incorporated into their product by a third party after sale. The Air and Liquid Systems Corporation produced equipment for United States Navy ships. Parts of the equipment required asbestos insulation and asbestos parts in order to function, but the manufacturers delivered the equipment without asbestos and the Navy added it later. Two Navy veterans, Kenneth McAfee and John DeVries, developed cancer and died after being exposed to asbestos while stationed on the ships. Their family sued manufacturer Air and Liquid Systems Corporation in federal district court, alleging that it had negligently failed to warn about the dangers of asbestos in the integrated products. Air and Liquid Systems Corporation countered that it should not be held liable for asbestos that was added later by a third party, an argument known as the bare metal defense. The district court ruled in favor of Air and Liquid Systems Corporation, but the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit vacated that judgment and remanded the case, concluding that a bare metal manufacturer could still be held liable if it was foreseeable that the materials in question would have been used with later added asbestos-containing material. The Supreme Court then granted cert to resolve a split among the circuit courts of appeals on whether the bare metal defense is valid under maritime law. The district court ruled in favor of Air and Liquid Systems Corporation, but the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit vacated that judgment and remanded the case, concluding that a bare metal manufacturer could still be held liable if it was foreseeable that the materials in question would have been used with later added asbestos-containing materials. The Supreme Court then granted cert to resolve a split among the circuit courts of appeals on whether the bare metal defense is valid under maritime law. By a vote of 6-3, the Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the Third Circuit. Justice Kavanaugh delivered the opinion of the court, holding that, in the maritime tort context, a product manufacturer has a duty to warn when its products require incorporation of a part, the manufacturer knows or has reason to know that the integrated product is likely to be dangerous for its intended uses, and the manufacturer has no reason to believe that the product's users will realize that danger. The majority opinion was joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Gorsuch filed a dissenting opinion in which Justices Thomas and Alito joined. And now, to discuss the case, we have Karen R. Harnd, Executive Director of the NFIB Small Business Legal Center.
On March 19th, the Supreme Court decided Air and Liquid Systems versus DeVries, which concerned whether federal maritime law requires a manufacturer of non-asbestos containing parts like pumps and turbines and blowers that are used on Navy ships to warn Navy sailors when it's likely that asbestos will be used with those parts later. In this case, the asbestos parts were used as insulation or connected parts like gaskets. And so when the Navy sailors were working with certain parts, they could be exposed to that asbestos. So the plaintiffs were two Navy veterans and their families. The sailors eventually passed away before this litigation concluded, so that it was carried on by their wives. They had developed cancer and died from asbestos exposure. So they originally brought their suit in Pennsylvania State Court. They did not sue the Navy because they believed that the Navy would be found immune from liability. As a practical matter, they could not recover from the manufacturers of the asbestos-containing parts like the insulation, the gaskets, because if you've been following asbestos litigation at all, you know that most, if not all, of these companies have gone bankrupt, so they had no money. So as a result, they sued the manufacturers of the non-asbestos-containing products for failure to warn. And again, these were turbines and blowers and those sort of things, and would come to the Navy as a bare metal product. It had no asbestos on it. So the plaintiffs argued that the manufacturers had a duty to warn these sellers because even though their parts were bare metal, they knew that asbestos would be required by the Navy to be incorporated with their parts to properly function on the boats, on the ships. But the defendants argued that they had no duty to warn because they weren't doing the incorporating. They did not make, distribute, or sell asbestos-containing products. They were selling the bare metal products, and that the Navy was the one having these parts incorporated that were dangerous. So invoking federal maritime jurisdiction, the manufacturers, the defendants, did successfully get the case removed out of Pennsylvania state court to federal court. And the district court granted summary judgment in favor of the manufacturers. But then the Third Circuit turned around, they vacated, they remanded, and argued for the application of a foreseeability test, which I'll cover here in a second. So the Supreme Court voted by 6-3. In an opinion that Justice Kavanaugh wrote, that a product manufacturer does have a duty to warn under certain circumstances, which I'll cover momentarily. Kavanaugh's standard is a new one that was really articulated for the first time in this case, and some are now calling it the required incorporation standard. So when he was going through his opinion, Justice Kavanaugh first outlined basic tort law principles, and I should say he was joined by the liberal wing of the court, Breyer, Sotomayor, Kagan, Ginsburg, as well as Justice Roberts. Justice Gorsuch filed a dissent that was joined by Justices Thomas and Alito. So as he goes through his opinion, Kavanaugh first says his understanding of basic tort law principles, and particularly when it concerns the duty to warn standard and what that means. And he explains that duty to warn imposes a general duty of care, including a duty to warn on a product manufacturer when that manufacturer knows or has reason to know that its product is or is likely to be dangerous for the use of which it is supplied, and that the manufacturer has no reason to believe that the end users, the product's users, are going to realize that danger. And he cites the section 388 of the statement, second restatement of torts. And he said that he goes on to say that federal and state courts have not agreed on how to apply this general tort law of duty to warn, the duty to warn principle. They have not agreed when you've got a situation like here where you've got a manufacturer of a product that later is going to be incorporated with a dangerous part in order for the integrated part to function as they're intended. And he then goes through the three different approaches. So the first is the foreseeability test, and this is the test that the Third Circuit had adopted in this case. And Kavanaugh does reject this, and his colleagues reject this. And Kavanaugh characterizes it as a very plaintiff-friendly doctrine in which it's very broad, and it imposes a duty to warn on the manufacturer when it was foreseeable that its product's going to be used with another dangerous product or part, even if the manufacturer's product did not require that use or incorporation of that other dangerous part or product. So that's very broad. So even if it's not required to be used with it, you would still have a foreseeability test there, or you'd still have a duty to warn on the part of the manufacturer of the non-dangerous part product. So then there's the next defense, which Kavanaugh characterizes as defendant-friendly, and that's known as the bare metal defense. This, not surprisingly, is what the petitioners in this case were asking the court to adopt, because they argued that it was very cut and dry, very easy to apply. And under this defense, a manufacturer would not have a duty to warn for injuries caused by a product it did not manufacture, sell, or distribute, even if its bare metal product requires incorporation of a part that manufacturer knows or has reason to know is likely going to be. So setting those two extremes, if you will, out, Kavanaugh charted a middle ground, or so he calls it, and it's called required incorporation. Well, some are referring to it as the required incorporation standard. Who knows what the name will ultimately be? But the standard is this, that if you're a manufacturer, you're going to have a duty to warn if your product requires incorporation of a part, like these products did, that the manufacturer also knows or has reason to know that ultimate integrated product is likely to be dangerous for its intended uses, and the manufacturer has no reason to believe that the product's users will realize that danger. So it is not as bad as the foreseeability test, because it is a little more cabined as far as you have to know that it's going to be in an integrated product that's going to be dangerous ultimately, and that dangerous part is going to have to be incorporated in it. So then he goes through his reasoning on why he doesn't think this new standard is going to be that burdensome for the product manufacturer, and in fact makes sense for them to be the ones to warn. And he says that the product manufacturer knows the nature of the ultimate integrated product, what it's ultimately going to be, and is typically more aware of the risks associated with that. And he said, you know, in contrast, a parts manufacturer may really only be aware that its part could conceivably be used in any number of ways in any number of products. And a parts manufacturer may not always be aware that it could be used in a way that poses a risk of danger, which I just find curious just in light of the fact that the parts we're talking about here that were dangerous contained asbestos, which I think all of us know is dangerous. And then he does acknowledge that there are costs associated with time and money associated with warnings. But he views it as a relatively light burden, that manufacturers already have a duty to warn on their products, so what's another warning, basically, I think is where he was going with that. And so then he finishes up by making it clear that this rule is tightly cabined. He goes back and says that, you know, there's not just a question of mere foreseeability. It requires, rather, that the manufacturers warn only when their product requires a part in order for the integrated product to function as intended. And then he says, we do not purport to define the proper tort rule outside of the maritime context. I think hoping that means that's all we're going to get, which let's all hope. And so that was his opinion. And then we had Justice Gorsuch, who had a great dissent. And I have to say, it was refreshingly brief opinions on both sides. Gorsuch starts out and says, everybody agrees that people who actually supplied asbestos have to warn. And then he says, everybody agrees that the Third Circuit went too far with this broad foreseeability test. And so he was happy about that. But then he goes on to really criticize this opinion and say, you know, the new three-part standard, although an improvement, he's concerned it suffers because it really is not grounded in common law. And he talks about his understanding of common law, and he says there's no duty to warn or instruct about another manufacturer's products, though those products might be used in connection with the manufacturer's own products. Instead, the manufacturer's duty is restricted to warnings based on the characteristics of the manufacturer's own product. And then he has some case law citing that. And he says that it's black letter law that the supplier of a product generally must warn only about those risks associated with the product itself, not those associated with the products and systems into which it may later be integrated, and cites the third restatement of torts, product liability, section 5, comment B. And so he also says that when it comes to warnings, the common sense rule really should be the manufacturer of the product is the best to understand and warn users about its risks, and that the language of law and economics really is incentivizing that kind of structure, so that when you're placing the duty to warn on the manufacturer, you're forcing that entity to internalize the full cost of any injuries that could, you know, result from inadequate warnings. And that we're really, in this, he's concerned that with Kavanaugh's new standard, you're diluting the incentive of the manufacturer of the dangerous product to warn about the dangers that their product will have on others. Then he has some interesting examples, colorful examples, and he said that the traditional common law rule better accords with consumer expectations. And he says, look at a home chef who buys a butcher's knife. You may expect to read warnings about the danger of knives, but you're not going to expect to see dangers of undercooked meat. Or, you know, somebody that buys gasoline may expect to see warnings at the pump about its flammability, but not necessarily the dangers about reckless driving. And he goes on to say that the traditional tort rule has another virtue, and that's that it's simple to apply, which was something that the petitioners had said a lot in their argument before the court, both in the briefings and in the courtroom. Really, with that, he goes on to just provide a number of questions as to what it means to be an integrated product. How far does that go? Is it just these blowers working? Are we going to go all the way to the propeller? Is it the whole ship? And, you know, that really it's just rife for mischief, I think, is what he's trying to get at in the court. He also is worried. He said it's great that we're saying it only applies in maritime, but if this goes beyond maritime, what kind of things could follow from that? Would a company that sells smartphone cases have to warn about the risk of exposure to cell phone radiation, or a car maker have to warn about the risk of improperly stored antifreeze? And then he talks about, as a practical matter, what could this all mean? Just, you know, higher prices. That when we effectively require manufacturers of safe products to subsidize those who make more dangerous items, we're promising to raise the price and restrict the output of socially productive products. Tort law is supposed to be about aligning liability with responsibility, not mandating a social insurance policy in which everyone must pay for everyone else's mistakes. So it was a really good opinion, I thought, as far as dissent, but sadly it was the dissent. But so that really was the case. You know, it'll be interesting to see how this is applied moving forward.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.